You know, somebody asked me a while back why I stand in the back before I come up. They thought maybe I was taking notes about who was sleeping or what you were doing, but I don't do that because I can see who's sleeping when I stand up here. I don't need to stand in the back. I do that for two things. Number one, to calm my nerves down. You'd think after 27 years I don't get nervous when I get up here, but when I stop getting nervous, I'll stop preaching. The other thing I do is that I make a note of who's here and who's not here, because that's what I do on Mondays. On Mondays, I contact the people who are not here by Monday or Tuesday to find out if there's anything that I can do or anything that I need to be looking about. So that's what I'm doing back there. I'm singing, but I'm taking notes at the same time. So now that you know. You know, Tim just mentioned something that is really important to me. Before I began teaching, I didn't think too much of the Old Testament. You know, I thought it was a cumbersome book. I thought there were a lot of names in it I couldn't pronounce, and there were a lot of things in it that I didn't really see the necessity of. But you know, as I got older and I began to study and I began to look at that book, I began to understand why God put it there for our learning, so that we can learn many things about the character and what God expects of us. And tonight we're going to conclude the study of the book of Exodus. So I want you to take your Bibles out and turn to Exodus. And we want to begin tonight where we left off last Sunday evening, and that is the murmuring for water. I want you to think about this for a minute. God has just led his people out of Egypt. They had witnessed him through his power and through the faithful servant Moses. They have witnessed him single-handedly destroy the mightiest nation on earth. They saw various plagues. They saw a distinction made between them and the Egyptians. And he saw them lead them through. And not only did they finally leave a free people, they also left very rich. Everything that they needed when they plundered the Egyptians was given to them. And then when they crossed the Red Sea, when their enemies pursued them one more time, God destroyed them. And then in Exodus chapter 15, we have the Song of Moses. And the Song of Moses is a song of thanksgiving for all the great and good things that God had done for them. But when we get to chapter number 16, and when we get to chapter number, the end of 15 to the beginning of 16, they begin to murmuring and hungering because they have no food and water. And then in chapter number 17, we get to the waters of Rehoboam in chapter 17. And they're so angry that they're thinking about going back to Egypt. And they're beginning to complain to God because they don't have food and water. Now, brethren, how ungrateful can you be? They had just received the first promise of the promises made to Abraham. They had just received their freedom. They were no longer in slavery. They were no longer in bondage to the cruelty of the empire of Egypt. They are a free people. They are a nation. They now have God leading them to the promised land. And yet, before they even begin, they began to murmur and complain because things don't suit them. Now, isn't that just like people today? They everything going well, and then when something goes wrong, they want to complain. And that's exactly what God's people did. But you know, do you ever wonder, why did it take them 40 years? It surely wasn't 40 years to the promised land, and it wasn't. Because you see, as we begin to look at the book of Exodus, we see that in 3 months from the time they left Egypt to the time that they came to the borders of the land of Canaan were 3 months, 90 days. And in 90 days in Exodus 19, they were at the borders of Canaan. And as they are in the land leaving Egypt, in Exodus 19, verse 3 through 8, we have the acceptance of the covenant. But I want you to turn your Bible to Exodus 19, and I want to read you an account of something that happened there. Look in verse 9. In verse 9 begins an account of God speaking to Israel. It said, "The Lord said to Moses, 'Behold, I come to you in a thick cloud, and the people may hear when I speak with you.' and believe you forever. So Moses told the words to the people, to the Lord. And the Lord said to Moses, go up to the people and consecrate them today, and tomorrow let them wash their clothes. And let them be ready on the third day. For the third day, the Lord will come down upon Mount Sinai in the sight of all the people. You shall set bounds and the people around, saying, take heed to yourself that you do not go up to the mountain or touch its base. Whoever touches the mountain shall surely be put to death. And then it goes on to give them some more instruction. And then if you look at verse number 18, it says, now the Mount Sinai was completely in smoke, because the Lord descended upon it in a fire. Smoke ascended like the smoke of a furnace, and the whole mountain quaked greatly. And when the blast of the trumpet sounded long and became louder and louder, Moses spoke, and God answered him by a voice. Then the Lord came down on Mount Sinai on top of the mountain, and the Lord called Moses to the mountain, to the top of the mountain, and Moses went up. And the Lord said to Moses, go down and warn the people, lest they break through to gaze at the Lord, and many of them perish. And also let the priests who come near the Lord consecrate themselves, lest the Lord break out against them. But Moses said to the Lord, the people cannot come up to Mount Sinai. You warned us, saying, set bounds around the mountain and consecrate it. So the Lord said to him, away, get down, and then come up, and you and Aaron with you, and do not let the priest and the people break through to come up to the Lord, lest he break out against them. So Moses went down to the people and spoke to them. Now I want you to picture this. Now this is probably a pretty good rendition. He comes up on the top of Mount Sinai. He appears and the whole cloud, the whole mountain is covered with fire. And there's smoke, and the mountain is quaking. And all of a sudden, you hear a booming voice that is the voice of God. Now, how would you ever forget that? How would you ever forget that for a glimpse, you heard the voice of God? Surely that would echo in your ear for the rest of your life. And why did God do that? God did that so they could understand that God was real. That God wasn't some figment of their imagination. That they had something concrete. And understand that Moses was his servant. And understood when Moses spoke, he spoke for God, and they should listen to everything that Moses said. Now you think they would never forget that. But you know what? About 3 years ago, there are two locations that presently are believed to be Mount Sinai. The second location, which I believe is the proper location, in which the minority group take to be the place, when they got to the top of the mountain, they've never been able to go to the top of the mountain for one reason or another, but those who have been able to be able to go to the mountain and look at it, you know what they found on top? It was all black. All the way around the whole mountain. I wonder why. Does that give validity to the Bible story of what happened on Mount Sinai? Yes. But you know what happened at Mount Sinai? Great things happened in Mount Sinai. In Mount Sinai, Moses went up on the mountain. How long was he there? 40 days and 40 nights. What did he do for 40 days and 40 nights? He received the law of God, and he received the Ten Commandments. And you remember, they're listed in Exodus chapter 20. You're to have no other gods before me. God will not tolerate idolatry. You are not to make any graven images. They were not to make of anything molded with their hands, of the shape of anything on the earth, under the sea, or above the earth. They were also told that they were not to take the Lord's name in vain. Remember the Sabbath day and to keep it holy. To honor your father and mother. To not commit murder. To not commit adultery. Do not steal. And do not bear false witness against your neighbor. And do not covet. The first four commandments have to do with their relationship with God. And the final six have to do with their relationship with their fellow man. Now, you know the great mistake that many people make? Is that when Moses was up on the mountain and he came down with the two tablets of stone, the only thing that he had was the Ten Commandments. Wrong. It wasn't just the Ten Commandments. This is the overview of the Ten. The Ten Commandments are an overview of the entire law. Then, for the 40 days, God gave him the details how to fulfill these Ten Commandments. Let me give you an illustration. Okay? It says, do not commit adultery. If you read in the book of Exodus and Numbers, he goes into great detail of what kind of relationships he calls adulterous. And he gives great details about those. So while he gave him the Ten Commandments, he also gave him the whole law. And so the whole law was given to Moses in those 10 days or 40 days, and then he brings him down off of the mountain. Now, Moses spends 40 days up on Mount Sinai, according to Exodus 31 through 32. Now, I want you to take your Bibles now and turn to Exodus 32. Now, I want you to look at what happened. In Exodus chapter 32, look at verse 1. And when the people saw that Moses delayed coming down from the mountain, the people gathered together Aaron and said to him, come, make us gods that shall go up before us. For as for this Moses, the man who brought us out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him. And Aaron said to them, break off the golden earrings which are in your ears and in your wives and your sons and your daughters and bring them to me. And so the people broke off the golden earrings which were in their ears and brought them to Aaron. And he received the gold from their hand, and he fashioned it with an engraving tool and made a molten cap. And he said, this is your God, O Israel, that brought you up out of the land of Egypt. So when Aaron saw it, he built an altar before it, and Aaron made a proclamation that tomorrow is a feast unto the Lord. Now, I want you to picture this. God's servant Moses is up on top of Mount Sinai. They have already heard the voice of God speak in the earlier account. And he's up there for 40 days. They get impatient. Imagine that. Men getting impatient. And though they get impatient, so they don't know what happened to Moses. Here's the first two mistakes they made. Number one, they said, the man Moses who brought us out of the land, no, Moses didn't bring them out of the land. God brought them out of the land, not Moses. Moses was the instrument, but the one that brought him out was God. And then they wanted to have God to go before him. Brethren, here is one of the Achilles' heel of the Israelite nation. And it is also an Achilles' heel of many people who do not believe in God. They had to be able to see. They had to visibly be able to see him to believe in him. They had to have some concrete, visible evidence that they could hear, see, or touch to know whether or not that he was God. And so since they didn't have that, they began to murmur, and God and Aaron gives in and makes this calf. But do you remember what happened? Now, do you think God would know about any of that? You remember what God told Moses? He said, you better get down there. You know, the people that you brought out, they began to rise up and play. And you remember what happened? He came down off the mountain, and Joshua, remember Joshua? He didn't go all the way up with him. He stayed at another level. Moses came down, met Joshua, and he came into camp, and Joshua said, it's the sound of war in the camp. Moses says, oh no, it's not. It's the sound of music. And look at Exodus chapter 32, and look at verse 18. Well, let's read verse 17. And when Joshua heard the noise of the people and shouted, he said to Moses, there's noise of war in the camp. But he said, it is not the noise of the shout of victory, nor the noise of a cry of defeat, but the sound of singing that I hear. And as soon as he came near the camp and saw the calf and the dancing, Moses' anger became hot. And he cast the tablets out of his hand and broke them at the foot of the mountain. And took the calf which they had made, burned it in the fire, ground it to powder, scattered it on the water, and made the children of Israel drink it. How angry do you think Moses was? You know the Bible calls righteous indignation? Here it is. righteous indignation. Here is Moses after God delivering them out of the hand, and what are they doing? They're doing the very thing that God said not to do in the Ten Commandments. Don't make any graven image. Don't bow down to it. Don't worship it. And they went ahead and made one anyway. And when he sees it, he breaks the tablets, crowns, takes the gap, grabs at the power, throws it in the water, and then makes them drink the water. How angry do you think he was? Now, look at verse 21. And you know, this always, you know, people say there's no humor in the Bible. Think about this for a moment. Look at verse 21. And Moses said to Aaron, What did this people do to you that you have brought this great sin upon them? Aaron, did they threaten you? Did they threaten to take your life? Did they threaten to kill you? What did they do? I left you in charge. What have you done? Look at Aaron's answer. Aaron said, do not let the anger of my Lord become hot, for you know the people, that they are set on evil. For they said to me, make us God that shall go before us. As for this Moses, the man who brought us out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him. And I said to them, whoever has any gold, let them break it off. And so they gave it to me, and I cast it in the fire, and this calf came up. It didn't. No, it didn't just come up. What did the text say? He told them to break the gold, send it to them, and what did the Bible say? He fashioned a calf out of it. It didn't just come out of a calf. He fashioned a calf. And I wonder why he did that. Why a calf? Why did he fashion a calf? And if you know anything about Egyptian pagan religion, they worshiped the calf. They worshiped the cow. It was a sacred animal. He picked that up in Egypt. And he makes a golden calf. But you know what he tried to do? He tried to shift the blame. Wait a minute, Moses. Don't get mad at me. You know how these people are. You remember what happened at Riyadh, didn't you? Remember when they complained about the water? They complained about the food? You know how they are. They're set on evil. But brethren, who had the authority? Aaron. Aaron led this people into sin. Now the people are to blame, but so is Aaron. And Aaron could have been dealt with at that very moment because he led God's people into sin. But you know what? You remember what he did? He asked a question. He said, who's on the Lord's side? And the Levites stood up and stood beside Moses. And he commanded them to go throughout the camp and to draw the sword, and they killed 3,000 people that day. And you know what God, you know what he was going to do? Look at verse 30, chapter 33. Look at verse 11. So the Lord spoke to Moses face to face as a man speaks to his friend. And he would return to the camp, but his servant Joshua, the son of Nun, a young man, did not depart from the tabernacle. And Moses said to the Lord, see, you have said to me, bring up this people, but you have not let me know whom you will send with me. Yet you have said, I know you by name, and you also have found grace in my sight. Now therefore I pray, if I have found grace in your sight, show me your way, that I may know you, that I may find grace in your sight, and consider this, and consider that this nation is your people. And he said, my presence will go with you, and I will give you rest. Then he said to them, if your presence does not go with us, do not bring us up from here. For how then will it be known that your people that I have found grace in your sight, except you go with us? So you shall be separate, your people and I, from the people who are on upon the face of the earth. You see, on two different occasions, God was ready to destroy Israel and start over with Moses. But you know who pleaded for him? Moses did. Moses said, if I've done anything wrong, blot my name out of the book. And you remember what God said in the book of Numbers? I won't blot your name out. I'll blot the name out of the one who disobeys me. And so God preserved Israel. But did it come at a price? Did it come at a price? Now, in the book of Exodus, the account of what happens next is not given. What happens next, we have to go to Numbers chapter 14 to find out what happens next. But I'm just going to give you a little side tour so you know what happens. What happens is, God, that night, the children of Israel cry all night. They cry and they want to go back to Egypt. They're ready to stone Moses and Aaron, and they're going to choose new leaders, and they're going back to Egypt. And you know what they charge God with? He says, didn't we tell you to leave us in Egypt? Leave us in Egypt. You brought us out in the wilderness to bury us and our children. And you know what? God said, I've had enough. He says, Moses, you tell them that they're not going to enter the land. In Numbers chapter 14, God told Moses, because of unbelief. Now you mark this down. What did God call unbelief? God called unbelief disobedience. Disobedience was equated to being unbelief. When you disobey God, that is unbelief. And God said, for every day that you are up on the mountain, I'm going to cause them to wander for 1 year. For 40 years. And why? Because every man over 20 years old that came up out of the land of Egypt would die in the wilderness. And would never enter the promised land except two people. Joshua and Caleb. The faithful spies that went into the land and came back with a good report when the other 10 came back with an evil report. And then, because of that, they wandered for 40 years. And you know what? When they came out of Egypt, there were 603,550 men over 20 years old. That's not counting the women. That's not counting the children. It's not counting those that are over under 20. And it's not counting the women and children. There are experts that say there would have been up to 3 million Jews at that time that came out of Egypt. And 603,000 of them died. 603,548. Two of them didn't. And they weren't Moses and Aaron. There was Joshua and Caleb. Now, brethren, what does this tell us? Does it tell us anything? It tells us that God has a limit. God is not going to be long-suffering forever. And so Moses, Aaron and the people worship the golden calf, and Aaron and Moses breaks the tables of stone in front of the people, and 3,000 people die in Exodus chapter 32. And this may have been what it looked like. Now, what's the remainder of the book of God all about in the book of Exodus? One subject, the tabernacle. I want you to turn to Exodus chapter 25. Now, I could spend two Sundays talking about the tabernacle. And I'm not going to try to do that tonight. But I want you to look at it. If you like to underline passages in your Bible, this is a good one to underline. Exodus 25, verse 8 and 9. Here's what it says. And let them make me a sanctuary, that I may dwell among them, according to all that I showed you, that the pattern of the tabernacle and the pattern of all of its furnishing, just as you shall make it. Question, when did he show him the pattern? When did Moses receive the pattern for the tabernacle? When he went up to the mountain the second time. The second time after he broke the tables of stones, he went up there for another 40 days, and when he went up there, he received the pattern of the tabernacle. And in Exodus chapter 25 through 30, And a little bit of chapter 33 to 34, you have the instructions of what the tabernacle is to be. And then in chapters 35 through 40, you have the actual building of the tabernacle. In Exodus 25 through 31, he receives the law and the instruction for the building. Now, brethren, that's why he was up there 40 days. He didn't just get the law. He didn't just get the Ten Commandments. He got the pattern for the tabernacle. And you know what people tell me today? That God doesn't care about detail. Really? Really? Well, let me read you about some of, let me tell you about some of the detail. This tabernacle was to be so long, so wide, and its curtains had to be out of scarlet and woven thread. It had to have so many loops that were silver, some that were gold. It had to be made out of acacia wood, a lot of the furnishings. It had to have different furnishings. All the furnishings were told by what material they would be built out of. All the furnishings were told to be put in a certain place. And all of that furnishing was to go in the tabernacle, and it was to go in the place that God designated for it to go. But do you know what happened? How did they travel? How did the nation of Israel travel? They traveled with the cloud and the pillar of fire. When the cloud would stop, they camped there. Whenever the cloud, this is when they're going in the wilderness, and whenever the cloud appears and it stops, when the cloud begins to move, that means they had to move the camp. And when they moved the camp, they would have to move the tabernacle. And so that's why it's called a tabernacle. What's a tabernacle? It's a tent. And a tent is something that you can take up, pack, and then put it back together again. Because they would be needing it while they traveled. But you know what? God gave instruction in the book of Exodus and also in the book of Numbers and Leviticus that we will look at later, that when they camped, the same three tribes, were to be on the south, the same three tribes were to be in the north, to the west, and to the east. And Moses and Aaron were to be right by the tabernacle, because they would be the high priest. Aaron would be the high priest. And every time that they stopped, they had to line up by those tribes, and each of them had one of the tribes was chosen as the leader, and they would all line up behind him. And that was every time they stopped. And when they began to march, the cloud would move. That was a sign that they were to leave. Then they were to march out in the order that God gave them. You know what that is, brethren? That's a pattern. That's detailed instruction. Why did God give those detailed instructions? Why did God give a pattern? Because He expected it to be followed. And everything that was in the tabernacle, do you remember what happened when the tabernacle was fully set up and when it was finished? Do you remember what happened? The glory of the Lord overshadowed the tabernacle. And they couldn't even go in because of the glory that shadowed the tabernacle in the form of a cloud. And the only one that was allowed to go in there was Moses. But why did God, in a symbolic way, take up residence in the tabernacle? Because they built it according to the pattern. Don't tell me that God does not expect details to be followed. He told them what material to make it out of. He told them what to put in the tabernacle itself. Told the priest, gave them specific garments. Told them specific sacrifices that they would have to make. When we get to the book of Leviticus, we're going to see all the sacrifices that were to be offered by the children of Israel by the hands of the priest. And they are very detailed and they are numerous. And do you wonder why the Levites couldn't do any manual labor? They were too busy. They were too busy offering the sacrifices on behalf of the people. Brethren, nobody that makes the argument that details don't matter to God never have studied the Bible. The details are what God's all about. And brethren, that passage in Exodus 25 tells us something. That God expects His patterns to be followed. He does not give them and then leave it up to us whether or not we want to do it that way or not. And let me give you a New Testament illustration. This morning in the radio program, I talked about one of the identifying characteristics of the Lord's church is its worship service. Does God have a pattern for worship? Yes, He does. The Bible says to sing. There are 9 accounts in the New Testament about music in worship. All of them, all 9, have to do with singing. There is a pattern in the New Testament that says upon every first day of the week, we gather around that table to partake of the Lord's Supper as the early disciples did in Acts 20 and verse 7. And in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, beginning in verse 23 through 30, we have the attitude that we're to do when we take the Lord's Supper. And it says as often as we do this, we do proclaim His death until He comes. And if you don't discern the Lord's body, you eat and drink damnation to yourself. Do you think the details matter? It matters about what you're thinking about when you take this Lord's Supper. What about our giving? Does it matter if you give it grudgingly or of necessity? Or if you don't give it, you give it but you really don't want to give it? Does it matter? Yeah, it matters. The Bible says we're to pray. We're not to pray to saints. We're not to pray for any departed saints. We're to pray to the Father through the Son. And we are to preach. We're not to do drama skits, puppet shows. We're not to preach opinion. We're not to preach human theology. We're to preach the Word. That's God's pattern for New Testament worship. Now here's a question. If God expected the pattern of the tabernacle to be built exactly according to His pattern, does He expect anything less in the worship of His church that He built and He purchased with His own blood? Does He expect us to follow that pattern too? And the answer to that is yes. Because it's the same God and the same principle. Why do you think we read these lessons of old? Those things that were written aforetime were written for our learning. I learned from the book of Exodus that God gave instruction and He expected those instructions to be followed to the letter. And God gives instructions today and He expects them to be followed to the letter. Now, close this evening with this one thought. In Genesis 6, God commanded a man long ago to build an ark. And in Genesis chapter 6, beginning in verse 13 to the end of the chapter, God gave Noah the explicit instructions of how the ark was to be constructed. Out of gopher wood. It was to have one door, one window. It was to have pitch in and out. It was to take 2 of every class of animal upon the face of the earth. It was to take grain and food to take care of the animals and them while they were in the ark. And it was to be made, as I said, out of gopher wood. Now, what would have happened if Noah started to think about it and thought, you know, when gopher wood gets wet, it kind of smells. So I'm gonna put cedar in the inside because cedar's a lot better smelling than gopher wood. What would have happened when the rain came upon the earth? The ark would have sank like a rock. Because it wasn't constructed very well? No. Because God didn't say cedar. He said gopher wood. Now, brethren, when God says gopher wood, what does that eliminate? Oak, elm, maple, cherry, you name it. You name anything you want to put in a blank. When God says go for wood, that eliminates everything else. When God said, when you make the curtains in the tabernacle, you use scarlet thread, what does that eliminate? Every other kind of thread. When God says that you make when God said you make the laver of brass, what did that eliminate? Gold, silver, or any other type of metal. He said make it out of brass. And when he said to take the metal clamps and make them out of silver, what did that eliminate? That eliminated gold. When God said to do it that way, that's the way that you did it. Now, one other illustration. You folks that are a little older, like me, and your children are in your home, when you gave instructions, did you give them it was up to them whether or not they obeyed them? Did you give your children optional instruction? Here's what I want you to do, but you do it if you want to. You know, I never got any of those kind of instructions when I was a kid. When my dad and mom said, this is what I want done, there was no negotiating about it. This is what their rules were, and I was to abide by the rules. Do we understand that when we were growing up in the home by our parents? We understood that. Same thing in school. They have the authority, they get the rules, you obey the rules. Why do people become brain dead when we're talking about religion? God gives instruction. What does He expect us to do with it? Follow it. Follow it. That's why He gives it. Do you think an infinite God could give instructions how He wants to be worshipped? In the manner that He wants to be worshipped, how He wants to be worshipped, and in what attitude He wants His worshipers to have when they worship Him? I believe God's able to do that. He did it here. In the book of Exodus, He told them, I want a sanctuary. This is what I want in it. This is what I want you to use to build it. And here's where I want you to put it every time you stop. And here's how I want you to line up around it every time you set it up. And what did He expect them to do? Follow the instruction. Now, why can't we get that today? People say today, details don't matter. That's your prerogative to believe it. But I'm here to tell you there's not a biblical example that you'll ever find that God ever gave an instruction and He left it up to them whether or not they could do it. And if they did it, fine. And if they didn't do it, that was fine too. When I studied the book of Exodus, I learned three things. Number one, God is a long-suffering and merciful God. On any number of occasions, He could have sent them back to Egypt, but He didn't. The second thing I learned in the book of Exodus is that God really loved His people. Because He tolerated their indifference and apathy from the very beginning. And the third thing I learned from the book of Exodus is that details do matter to God. When God will tell a nation how to build His sanctuary and how to put the furnishings in it, and of what material to make them out of, and where to place it, and where to place the people around it when they set it up, and then they do it, that tells me that the details matter. Now I want you to remember what the book of Exodus is about. It's about the building of a nation in captivity. And God has now, at the book at the end of Exodus, God has kept promise number one. And they are at the borders of Canaan to keep promise number two. But sadly, it didn't happen because they became disobedient. But that's another book, and that's another story that we'll do later. Now, the next book that we'll cover in this series is Leviticus. Now that doesn't seem like a very, that's kind of a boring book, isn't it? Like Numbers is a boring book. Well, I'm going to guarantee you it's not boring. And I'll give you one illustration about Numbers. In Numbers there are two censuses. You know what a census is? We just have one. That's the counting of the people. Why are there two? Didn't they get the number right the first time? No. There's two different groups. The one that came out of Egypt is census number one. The one that grew up in the wilderness, that's census number two. Because there's two different groups. One that grew up in captivity and the one that grew up while they wandered in the wilderness for 40 years. That's why you have two census in the book of Numbers. And that's why we have the book of Deuteronomy. It's the giving of a law a second time to a new generation. Brethren, the Old Testament is a wonderful, wonderful book. It has so many good lessons in it. Don't sell it short. Study it. Read it. Learn to love it. Because when you understand the Old Testament, you will appreciate the New Testament. And you will understand exactly what God expects from His people today, because it is no different than what He expected back then. He expected faithful obedience by His children. It has been that way from the very beginning of Adam and Eve, and it will be that way till time on earth ends. God expects obedience. If you're here tonight and you're not a child of God, we don't want to close this service without giving you an opportunity to obey the gospel. We also don't want to give those who might be here to make you right. We don't know the condition of the hearts of people that are in the audience, and so we want to give you this opportunity to make your life right with God. And again, before I forget, there's a list back there. If you want copies of these slides, put your name on that list. I'm going to make them in three hole punch papers so you can put them in a notebook. So if you want those and you didn't get Genesis, write that down by your name that you didn't get Genesis. I'll make you the copy of Genesis. And one other thing about these books, they are going to be on our new web page. I'm going to put on the web page all these slides on every book of the Bible, so they're not only available to you, but they're available to other people. Because I believe the more that people know about the Bible, the more that they'll love it. And the more they study it, the stronger and better people they'll be. And if we can help you in any way tonight, we bid you to come forward as together we stand, as we sing.